Okay, thanks very much and good afternoon. My name is Jeff Milroy. I'm at the University of North Carolina, Greensboro, in the Department of Public Health Education. There's a lot of authors up there that are a part of this, and some of them are in the room, because there was a lot of work that went into what I'm going to be sharing with you today. Before I jump into that, I have no relationships to disclose. But my goal here today is to make a lot of recommendations. And sometimes recommendations are made and they're kind of lofty, especially those that are coming from NIH, CDC, the work of others, and it's kind of like, what do we do with those recommendations? And I've been fortunate to be part of a research team that we have been able to follow some of those recommendations pretty successfully, some by accident, some very purposeful. So what I want to do is I want to talk about making a case for the student-athlete. I'll be very brief with that. Speak about the gap between what we intend behavioral interventions to do, the need for them, and what's currently available and what's currently available that's effective. And then I'll go through these six essential steps to behavioral intervention development, including establishing scientifically established mediators, developing a theoretical program model, and it's really nice to have folks like this up here who are doing a lot of the work that have contributed to some of the stuff that either we have done or others have done in terms of behavior intervention development, packaging that intervention for the most appropriate audience and a dissemination plan, how we can integrate program evaluation into that and how these other steps can lead to good program evaluation, and then type 2 translational research that can promote sustainability. And so in no way am I taking these as my recommendations. It's from the work of others. It's from CDC. It's from NIH, some of them of which we've adapted a little bit. But so we're all on the same page. Behavioral intervention aimed at modifying behavior for the purpose of treating, prevention, disease, promoting health, enhancing well-being. Behavior interventions are likely to include multiple behavioral theories. In fact, that's encouraged. And that we look across models that were presented today and how do they integrate with other models and the factors and the mediators that are associated with our outcome of interest. And that really is something you'll keep hearing me saying, is outcome of interest. So making the case for student-athletes. When we look at prevalence of alcohol use among college students, the differences between athletes and non-athletes is relatively negligible. But when we start looking at that risky drinking behavior, binge drinking and extreme drinking, so binge, we've all heard, 5 or more for men, 4 or more for women, and extreme drinking, the 10-plus category, that's when we actually see those differences kind of rise to the surface. We also know that type of behavior is associated to negative consequences. That's not hard to kind of get our head around that. So then we also see among the student-athlete population, they're experiencing more negative consequences. So this slide's to say that we should be paying attention to student-athletes because they're a population at risk. So the inherent gap that I referred to earlier. So the gap between the importance of impact of behavioral factors on student-athlete health or competition, which we work closely with the NCAA, so fair competition is important and is essential. But the gap between that and their well-being and the effectiveness of today's programs or interventions that are modifying these behavioral factors or traits and outcome of interest. So what I'm going to talk about, I'll work myself through those as 6 essential steps, and I'll be using a program called My Playbook as the example. It was specifically designed for the NCAA student-athlete, multiple phases of funding through NIDA. It's web-based. And although it's web-based, many of these recommendations or suggestions, if you will work very well for face-to-face programs, peer-led programs, I think, generally speaking. And whereas the strategies that I'm going to present here work well with alcohol and other drugs, my focus will be around alcohol, highest prevalence of substance use within that population. So it just makes sense that I focus a little bit more on that. So the first step, identifying malleable risk and protective factors. That term malleable is really important there. And so this comes from some of the work that Dr. Head is describing here too, is identifying particular models, factors, mediators, strategies, whatever you might want to label them, and identifying them as risk or protective factors that are linked to positive and negative health outcomes, whatever those are you are intending to impact. And understanding not only that those are kind of playing a role, but how are they related to one another? And so for alcohol and other drug intervention strategies or interventions, programs, there's some pretty common ones that come up. And some of these we actually saw already. So social norms, expectancies, self-efficacy, etc. Skills, communication skills, goal setting, decision making. And I'm going to pull out a couple of those to talk about a little bit more because those are the ones that we really honed in on with my playbook. So social norms, we had a great definition and description of them before. Descriptive norms, perception of others' prevalence. Injunctive norms, perception of the acceptability or approval of the behavior. The way that we target those within my playbook is essentially we have interactive activities in which the athlete can make guesses. What do they think that their athlete peers or non-athlete peers are doing in terms of descriptive norms? Typically, they're going to overestimate. And then the most important piece there is that personalized feedback, giving them back the accurate data. And the more proximal or relevant data that's there, the more useful it's going to be for the student athlete. And for injunctive norms, we do the same thing. They interact with some data, with some activities that they're allowed to guess, and then they're given that personalized feedback. What we have found is that although norms in general are playing a really strong role here, that injunctive norms are playing a significant role in terms of changing behavior and other mediating factors that are involved. Expectancies. These are the expectancies that an individual, in this case a student athlete, has when they consume alcohol or other drugs. And these expectancies can be either positive or negative. And the challenge here is, or it's very difficult to change someone's expectancies when related to any behavior, and in particular alcohol and other drug use. But what we can do is we can challenge those expectancies. So the way that we do that within my playbook, we ask them to identify the expectations that they have after consuming alcohol or other drugs. We then get them to provide value to those expectations. So we're not going to tell them whether it's positive or negative. They may decide that a hangover in the morning is a positive expectation that they have. But what we can do is we can challenge that expectation that they have and provide data back through that personalized feedback, in which then can get them to reconsider whether that's positive or negative. Essentially, what we're trying to do is we're trying to minimize those positive expectations that they have and really boost up the negative expectations that they may have. Self-efficacy plays a very strong role in terms of working through intentions for future behavior change. In particular, what we focus in on is intentions to use harm prevention strategies. Harm prevention strategies or harm reduction strategies for themselves and for others. So examples might be for themselves avoiding pre-partying or pre-gaming, drinking games, doing shots. And then harm prevention for others would be taking the keys away from somebody else who might be driving or being a designated driver or choosing not to drink. And that's where the harm prevention strategies for others plays a significant role, is that there are a solid group of student athletes out there, and college students for that matter, that choose not to drink. And so what other harm prevention strategies can they be using even if they're in dangerous environments? There's also values clarification, and this actually works really well for high school students and high school student athletes, because what they're thinking about is potential graduation, maybe competing at the NCAA level, and we're starting to integrate that a little bit more with our college student athletes, those in particular that are looking to compete beyond NCAA. And so what we get them to do is we get them to consider, what are my behaviors that I'm doing right now, and how are they matched with what my outcomes or my objectives are for the future? And if they don't really match up, we call that lifestyle incongruence. And we get them to explore that a little bit further. And then lastly, beliefs about consequences, straight from health belief model. We have both short-term and long-term. You see lifestyle incongruence plays a role there. But the key here is personal susceptibility. And we actually all probably do this. A good example is anybody who has kids and you're riding a bike and you make sure that your son or daughter has a helmet on, but you don't necessarily put one on. It's we usually attribute more negative consequences or potential for negative consequences for somebody else. And so in my playbook with student athletes, what we do is we have them list a bunch of negative consequences that somebody else may have with regards to alcohol and other drug use. And then we ask them to do the same thing for themselves. And typically it's a much shorter list from themselves. And we say, what's going on here? Why are there discrepancies for others and not necessarily yourself? The next essential step is the development of a theoretical program model. And I believe that this is one of the most important steps. This is where you can kind of make or break it for moving forward in terms of adequate assessment and evaluation of your program. It also leads into the packaging of the intervention components, as well as identifying who's the most appropriate audience. So essentially where we've come from is we've identified these strategies, we kind of put them together, and now we're trying to package them into this behavioral intervention. That's setting us up, like I said, into evaluation through experimental designs down the road, and if you're fortunate in RCT. And so here's just an example of one that I might consider to be a little bit more simplistic, but essentially on the left here you would have your intervention components, and those intervention components are aimed at these targeted strategies, so social norms, positive and negative expectancies, in which most cases we know typically run through intentions, so these expected proximal outcomes, which then tend to and typically lead to whatever your distal outcome is. So in this case, and this is the one of our earlier My Playbook models, alcohol and other drug use and those related negative consequences. And so theoretically, we can really test this just based on this block right here, and then we can also theoretically test it based on this block right here in terms of some of our outcomes. This is the example of, I wouldn't call it more complex, just maybe just different. And in this case, what we have here is a distal outcome of self-report of sport-related concussion symptoms by the student-athlete. So this is the student-athlete model on the top. And you actually see some of those same similar mediators that are playing a role, self-efficacy, negative expectancies. But we also, as highlighted today, the role of coaches is very important. So we then look at the coach's role very different. We're still looking for behavior change within the student-athlete, but we're also looking at some behavior changes within the coach. So their attitudes and beliefs regarding sport-related concussions and the symptoms, their knowledge, not essential but important as part of the model, their positive and negative expectancies related to the student-athlete reporting the concussion and what happens after that. And so these two models can actually work nicely together. Again, this is just really emphasizing the importance of model development as you're moving forward, leading into pilot testing and evaluation of the intervention package. So some examples that I have in terms of the pilot tests, the work that I'm sharing today is really 7-8 years old, and so some of this is six, seven years ago that we were able to take what we had then, what was My Playbook, and pilot test it. And so this one of our earlier pilot tests was with Division II schools, and we were able to get 60 institutions at the time. We typically target freshmen and transfer student-athletes, over 5,000 student-athletes, and it was a randomized delayed treatment design. And for those that are familiar with that, that's really helpful in the pilot stages, but because you can still give your participants the program. You don't have a true control in which you say, all we want to do is collect data from you. And so that in particular allowed us to assess whether our targeted intervention strategies were moving our mediators. We weren't necessarily all that concerned about behavioral change at that time. We knew that, theoretically speaking, that if we're moving those things, we're probably in good shape. And for pilot tests, I think that's okay. The next thing that we did is much more of a feasibility pilot study. And this was with the Southern Conference. UNCG, our athletic department, is part of the Southern Conference, and so in terms of proximity and access, this worked out well for us. So less institutions, less students, but really we weren't looking at any mediator change. We were looking at more feasibility in terms of the student-athlete's experience. We were able to do site visits, meet with coaches, meet with administrators, meet with the student-athletes. What do they want? What do they need? How is that going to be able to be presented through My Playbook in a way that they want it? So really trying to identify the way that we need to package this for the intended audience. This next piece right here, we could probably spend about 3 or 4 days talking about it, and it's a really exciting experience that we went through and are continuing going through, but the way that I've listed this here is identifying innovative methodologies to really break apart an intervention. And so through another professional organization, the Society for Prevention Research, we were linked up with Dr. Linda Collins, who is the director of the Methodology Center at Penn State. And Dr. Collins has a methodology called MOST, the Multi-Phase Optimization Strategy. And what that's allowed us to do, and can allow anybody essentially with a built intervention at that point, is to break it apart into its most important pieces, whatever the developers identify as the most important pieces. Test each one of those individual pieces in its relationship to the outcomes of interest. And you can set your own effect criteria, and what we work through is a decision tree based on, did we meet the criteria or not? And what that allows you to do is take your intervention and say, we don't need this anymore because it's not performing, or we know this is important, therefore we need to do something better at targeting that particular mediator. So like I said, we could talk about that for days and days and days. But right now we're at the tail end of MOST, and the tail end of MOST is determining efficacy. So we actually went through 3 experimental experiments. We called them component selection experiments that got to us to what we would consider our optimized version of My Playbook. And then we went into a fully powered RCT. So 8,000 plus student athletes across divisions 1, 2, and 3 at the school levels, random assignment to treatment or control. In this case, as I noted earlier with delayed treatment, in this case, all student athletes actually got the introductory lesson. So there were student athletes getting something. So it wasn't just data collection. There was a pretest that came right before the intervention, and then there was a 30-day post, which we're actually kind of in the midst of right now, and then there's a four-month follow-up survey that happens in the spring. And so, in particular, what we're looking at right here is we're looking at what is my playbook doing in terms of our intended outcomes. And that's the way that other interventions, once they've got to this point, should be doing as well. Now we've gone through all the pilot testing, we've gone through the development, the packaging, optimization, whatever kind of language you want to use. Now we want to test it within the environment in which we're attempting to make those changes. So we're assessing alcohol and other drug use declines, as well as alcohol or drug-related negative outcomes. Those are our outcomes of interest. And as we all know, if there are funders out there, that's what they're looking for. They're looking for those behavioral changes. And then the last one that gets quite a bit less attention is type 2 translational research. And this is to promote sustainability. And I was actually first exposed to type 2 translational research only a few years ago. And it was there's some folks at Penn State who are doing a lot of great work in this area. And type 2 translational research is essentially enhancing the adoption of a program intervention through implementation and sustainability. What does it take to keep that program going? And it doesn't always mean money. It could, but it doesn't always have to mean money. In our case, what we're looking at is implementation support and technical assistance. And so what we've done is we've worked closely with the NCAA to do what we're calling the Division I conference level implementation. So you'll see many more institutions, many more student athletes. So over 103 institutions participating. That means there's a My Playbook admin, at least one in every institution. Over 12,000 NCAA Division I student athletes. This is a non-randomized sample. This started in the summer and it just opened up. We had targeted recruitment, of course. But it's on them, and that's what we're trying to learn, the support that's needed to recruit those that have a free program. They're not paying for this program, and how do we get them in? And then, once a school has agreed to participate or wants to implement My Playbook, what do they need along the way? And so what we're going to learn is from student-athletes, how did they complete My Playbook? Was it with a tablet? Was it in a lab? Was it their own personal computer? Was it on school? Was it in a dorm room? Was it off-campus housing? Did they complete it? And if they didn't complete it, why did they not complete it? Did they start and stop it? Did they have technical issues? If they did have technical issues, were those resolved? So really looking at, you know, fine-tuning implementation and participation in an evidence-based program. And then we also look to the institutions. So the athletic administrators, coaches, athletic trainers, what were the challenges that they had? What were the barriers that they had? Or what we really love is the school that got 99% of their student athletes to participate, right? What are they doing? What are their successes and how do we emulate that at other institutions? So in summary, I'm making the recommendation for others to look to these six essential steps as, you know, that's kind of gold standard, and if there's an opportunity to get there and to do those things, it's really setting you up for greater success in the future, and depending what your outcomes of interest are, may get you there a bit quicker than kind of, you know, pilot study after pilot study after pilot study. Thank you.